Good morning, this is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. Early this month, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham announced some big changes in funding for child care in New Mexico. The biggest news is that starting August 1st, families earning up to 400% of the poverty level can get assistance for child care. That means families of four making up to around $90,000 a year are now eligible. If you consider that child care can cost $2,000 a month, you'll see that even higher earners are cost-burdened. Further, there's a ripple effect when family members choose to stay home with their kids to save on childcare costs instead of rejoining the workforce. In addition to the expanded eligibility, there will be a boost in subsidies to childcare centers to help with their costs. But will that money go to increased wages, improved curriculum, or facility improvements? Today, we'll hear from the state's Early Childhood Education and Care Department, childcare advocates, an early childhood educator, and an operator of childcare centers who also represents the industry in a statewide association. We want to hear from you also. Will getting aid to pay for childcare make a difference to your family? Have you thought about going to work in childcare? Please reach out. Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 277-5866. My first guests are Catherine Freeman, the president and CEO of Growing Up New Mexico, and Kate Noble, the group's VP of Policy and Stakeholder Engagement. Growing Up New Mexico works on public awareness and building political will for expanding early education and child care in the state. Good morning, Catherine and Kate. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Kaveh.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the one of the big questions. I think nearly everyone supports the idea of education and early childhood education. So why has it been challenging to secure steady funding for these programs in New Mexico?
Thank you, Kaveh. This is Catherine Freeman. very, very good question. The childcare industry over the years is probably one of the most neglected industries in our country and in our state. So the focus on investment in early childhood and the necessity of that focus has just not been completely understood. Child care, as you know, we are talking about today, is the foundation for economic growth in our state and in our nation. But also, it's the foundation for success in school for our children. So investment in it is really, really critically important. And thank you to our governor and to Secretary Gergensky. The foundation for being able to move forward in early childhood has been established.
I guess I'm wondering, why is early childhood education thought of differently or separately from public education for older kids?
Kate?
Well, one thing, and Catherine spent a lot of years working to really professionalize the position, but somehow, you know, and it goes back to some of our foundational biases as a society of that parents should be staying home taking care of young children. And in New Mexico, you know, as Catherine mentioned, we have a lot of great will from the governor and from Secretary Gergensky. We've also had a lot of great will from the legislature. And, you know, so to your previous question, we have been building investments, but it is such a starved industry because of a lot of this fundamental bias, the informality of it. It's never been organized in the same way that K-12 and now pre-K-12 education has. And the system is just starved over decades with, frankly, myths and sometimes harmful perceptions that it's just babysitting and that this isn't important, when the science tells us the exact opposite. And the science tells us that the first 5 years are really the most important for human brain development. 85% of the brain develops then. But it's just been a long time thing. You know, it probably goes back to when we could afford to have single earning households and parents staying home. But it's been a long time since our economy and structures have evolved beyond that, and early childhood still has some catching up to do.
Now, Kate, just so we have a clear understanding, could we explain the differences between early childhood education, child care, and then you mentioned babysitting? And I want to emphasize, I'm not trying to be offensive to anyone in any of those particular portions of the workforce, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page here.
Yeah, well, these things do still need to be defined more widely. I mean, in the industry, we sort of understand that early childhood really should be a continuum of developmental stages that are understood and support for families in raising children, along that through, you know, language-rich environments. And, you know, many languages are great. Children need to hear words and see colors and shapes. They learn so much more than we give them credit for when they're young. And really, early childhood as a continuum would recognize those developmental stages and support families along the way to have the most rich developmental environment. Babysitting, as it's typically referred to, I guess, refers to just keeping kids at the basic level, at safe. They're not going to hurt themselves. They're not going to burn the house down or, you know, catch fire, whatever it is. But really, you know, and there are plenty of babysitters out there, or, you know, young folks perhaps who are called babysitters, who are doing the right things that are developmental, taking kids outside, talking to them about nature and colors and the sensation of the wind on their skin or whatever it is. And in the policy realm, we have these different structural buckets. And child care has been one that has fundamentally been about supporting working families. And now we're seeing an evolution of the system where child care can become more than that, whereas pre-K has always been about school readiness. And Catherine's very good on some of these structural things and the policy buckets that we've put different funding in as we juice up the early childhood system.
Okay, I have a question for our listeners. Are you staying home with your child instead of returning to work because of the cost and difficulty of finding childcare? Share your story with us by calling 277-5866 or tweeting with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Sorry, Catherine, I think I cut you off there. Did you have something to add?
No, that's okay. I just want to talk a little bit more about the workforce. And, you know, I think we need to be careful with our words about too great a distinction between babysitting and childcare. We have many, many providers in the state of New Mexico who probably would fall under some sort of babysitting rubric or whatever. And if we can have a workforce development system that honors the years of experience, that's able to evaluate the competency of those people who may fall in a babysitting bucket and make sure that they're able to earn a living wage, maybe create a new childcare business, then we've elevated the whole conversation around childcare and what's required.
Sure. Since you're bringing up workforce issues, you know, there's been a workforce shortage in nearly every field this year, but the COVID-19 pandemic hit childcare uniquely. Childcare centers were considered essential, but many of them closed and many workers have left the field. Do we have the childcare infrastructure and workforce we need right now, or are we facing a capacity problem?
We are facing a capacity opportunity.
Okay.
I'm going to frame that way simply because obviously creating a robust, well-compensated, well-trained workforce is probably the most essential element in our success in childcare, pre-K, and all of the early childhood continuum. So that's really critically important. The work that Secretary Grigensky and Mariano Padilla in the Children's Cabinet and, you know, Governor Lujan Grisham have really set the stage to make some pretty rapid progress, you know, in terms of training of child care professionals. Now, can we get to full capacity overnight? No, of course not. we probably won't get to full enrollment overnight since COVID is still so dancing about us and creating lots of issues to solve. But all of the work for the last 30 years in early childhood and the most recent work of the new department, the Early Care and Education Department, sets the stage to be able to take some pretty dramatic action.
Okay, so we're kind of now talking about the infrastructure that's in place, some of it new. And I know that Growing Up New Mexico's kind of mission is to expand early education and access across the state. I'm wondering which areas of that mission need the most attention. Is it recruitment of educators? Do you have a priority?
Well, the whole system is interconnected, I'd say, but Catherine's precisely right to point to the workforce. Like most industries, this one really depends on the people staffing it. And this is an industry that is about working with children and the active care and attention that those children need. So we have, it's really difficult to overstate the opportunity and the progress that has been made, particularly in the past year. In New Mexico, we are only the fifth state to create a cabinet-level early childhood department, and we have made incredible progress under the leadership of the governor and Secretary Gruginski, but this is such a starved industry, and fundamentally the workforce underpins all of it, and it's many of the same issues as there that are there for educators, but to some extent, it's there's more to do because it's less organized. And until we have the foundation of a well-paid, skilled workforce, we will be building capacity, which does have other issues of physical spaces and public perception and understanding. But if I had to point to one, I think it's the workforce. Well, Catherine, what do you say?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There, you know, that when we're talking about workforce and elevation of early childhood and child care in general, as Kate said, we're talking about many things. But the foundational underpinning here is just simply a well-compensated and well-trained, you know, workforce. So when we think about it, Growing Up New Mexico, what these things mean, a well-compensated workforce also means a workforce that's compensated towards increased quality.
Okay, actually, I'm going to
talk about it.
I'd like to jump in and introduce our next guest, Elizabeth Gruginski. She's the Secretary of New Mexico's Early Childhood Education and Care Department, that's ECECD, which oversees the state's child care industry, after school programs, and some kids' nutrition programs. Thank you so much for joining us, Secretary Gruginski.
Yeah, good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. Yeah, we're talking a little bit about needs in the industry, particularly with the workforce and recruitment and training. And I'm wondering if ECECD is somehow involved in that aspect.
Yes, absolutely. And the recent policy changes that we made regarding the increased rates for our child care providers, we feel are a really important step. First step in helping ensure that our early childhood workforce are able to receive better wages, better compensation, not where we want to stop, but definitely a good beginning. So we also believe these increased rates, which are based on a cost estimation model of what it actually takes for a family child care provider to serve an infant, for a center-based provider to serve a toddler or preschooler at different levels of quality. This will really help New Mexico's child care system improve, allow providers to invest in their own businesses, and then ideally, you know, continue to think about how to pay their workforce, but also think about a professional compensation package that allows for sick leave, that supports health insurance and supports a really strong wage. Because I think as Catherine and Kate were sharing, the educator is where the quality happens for children, for families. When a family member can drop off their child and know that that educator has knowledge, has the disposition, the characteristics to care for their children, that parent is able to go off to work, focus, not be concerned about not only the health and well-being of their child, but also their growth and development. And I just want to say that I think so many of our child care providers across the state serve as a connection point for families to so many other resources, whether it's our early intervention programs, like you said, our family nutrition programs, and other supports that families need while they're busy working, but wanting to also do what's best for their child.
Okay, maybe we can come right back to that, but we need to take a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls. We're about to get into the expanded eligibility for child care assistance. If you have questions, give us a call, 277-5866, or to tell us about your child care situation. We'll be right back.
Support provided by Jen Wilson, home team of RE/MAX Select. As a realtor for 26 years, Jen believes home ownership can help create independence and wealth for women's futures. Information for prospective home buyers and sellers at nmhouse.com. Support comes from the HRSA-funded Southwest Telehealth Resource Center, offering informational webinars on telemedicine use during COVID and other related topics. More information is available at southwesttrc.com.
There's a long tradition of music inspired by visual art, and that continues right up to this day. Coming up, a 2021 world premiere from a concert in Paris, a brand new violin concerto by Pascal Zavaro, inspired by the paintings of Jean-Michel Basquiat. On the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. On the phone with us this morning, we have Catherine Freeman and Kate Noble from Growing Up New Mexico and Secretary of New Mexico's Early Childhood Education and Care Department, Elizabeth Groginski. Secretary Groginski, we've been kind of teasing this discussion about the newly expanded eligibility for child care. That was the big news from your department and the governor's office earlier this month. Starting August 1st, eligibility for child care assistance will expand in New Mexico from 200% to 400% of the federal poverty level. It seems like this is really aimed at helping middle-class New Mexicans. Why this and why now?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. And we are very excited about this new policy announcement. And I just want to clarify that it's people can enter into child care assistance at 350, but stay on it and receive it up to 400. But the reason it's so important is just what I was discussing earlier, doing this cost estimation study. It wasn't that we didn't know it before the study, but it really came clear to us how expensive childcare is for most families, and definitely for a huge portion of the middle class that has struggled to find and afford quality childcare. If I could just give an example, prior to the expansion, a family of four would qualify for childcare assistance if they made around $53,000 annually. That's the 200%, which if a family of four made that $55,000 a year, which is around the median income for New Mexico families, they would no longer qualify. And assuming that they have two young children, they might be paying up to $2,000 a month out of pocket for childcare, or nearly half of their pre-tax income. We don't think any family in New Mexico should be financially hobbled by that cost of child care. And that's why the governor felt so strongly that we needed to expand eligibility to help more New Mexico families afford quality child care. We think this is going to be a game changer for New Mexico families, and they'll be able to save, you know, either for college, for a house, or even just have an emergency fund available to their family.
Thank
you,
Secretary.
Those are the reasons. Oh. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. No, I was just saying those are the main reasons behind needing to make this change and recognizing with the federal relief dollars, this is an opportunity for us to help New Mexico families for the next 2 years.
Okay, thank you for that example you gave. And I think we might have an even more concrete example. We have a caller, Bill, from the East Mountains on the line. Go ahead, Bill. What's your child care story?
Hi, yeah, this is Will.
Will.
Just recently, my wife just pulled out of the workforce. She's an educator herself, grades 6 through 12, because it made more financial sense for her to be at home instead of paying for child care that is basically, when we looked at all of the child care options on the west side of Albuquerque where we live, it was babysitting. Nobody could speak to the curriculum that they presented as part of their programs. And I believe it was Secretary Gorginsky just a moment ago that was saying that they wanted middle-class families to be able to, or any family really, to be able to go and go to work knowing that their child is not only safe and healthy, but also receiving that pivotal education for the first 5 years of their lives. And there just are not good enough options in Albuquerque on the west side. And we had to pull her out of the workforce to be able to achieve what was best for our son.
Okay, thank you, Will. Thanks for calling in. And Secretary, there I heard both issues of affordability, but also quality. Do you have a response for Will?
Yeah, Will, I'm really sorry to hear that, both for your wife and for the fact that you couldn't find those options. And that's really the charge of this new department, is to make sure that wherever families are and where children are, that they have options that are high quality. So we have a very large initiative within our department to improve the quality of care, to make sure that what's called focus on young children's learning. And so thank you for calling. We're going to talk with the staff and see what's happening on the west side of Albuquerque and how, as a department, we can work with our local partners and others, advocates and other providers, to make sure that that is not the case for families. Because he said it so well. That's going to be a concern for families if they can't drop their child off at a place where they feel that their child is not only safe and healthy, but also being nurtured and educated.
Well, let's be clear. What are some of the benefits of early childhood education? What does that do for children?
Yes, the neuroscience and the developmental science and the research is very clear that the earliest experiences a child has really form the architecture of their overall brain development. And those early experiences are everything from, I think, what I heard Kate and Catherine talking about, exposure to good language. And the first and most important thing that a child needs to know is that they're safe. And that once they're safe, then they know that they can go and explore their environment. And their environments, you know, need to have, I think we heard a great example from one of our educators at the press conference, just talking about how these new funds would help her take the children out more on field trips, build, you know, buy and purchase high quality materials that would allow them to engage in their environment and with their peers. With babies, it's, you know, on-demand feeding, it's very nurturing care, it's being held while they're being fed. And so there's all these interactions that we have with young children that really set the architecture of their brain. And they hear language culturally and linguistically is a very important part of our program delivery. So are our educators able to speak the language of the children that they're serving, or at least put into the environment cultural and linguistic opportunities and things that reflect the family's values and the family's culture? So those are all ways that babies' brains, there's about a million synapses happening every second in a baby's brain. So once they know they're safe, they can start exploring and taking up all the learning and environment that's coming around them. So that's really first and foremost. And then again, language-rich environments, lots of interactions and opportunities for them to explore on their own and discover things. So that's what creates a high quality classroom. So that's why you need an educator who understands that about child development and also has those skills and competencies and knowledge to continue to expand on that environment for young children.
Okay, I'd like to read a tweet we got from Patty. She says, underappreciated aspect of expansion of childcare access in New Mexico by ECECD is increased access to healthy meals that meet nutrition standards for young children during critical periods of development. Are some of those expansion funds going to nutrition programs?
We run the Child and Adult Care Food Program, which is a program out of the U.S. Department of Agriculture that helps support nutritious and healthy meals in child care facilities. So part of our work under our Division of Early Care Education and Nutrition is to make sure that our child care facilities across the state are utilizing that program, are getting the expertise from our team, the education, but also the resources and funding to make sure that children have access to healthy, nutritious meals.
Okay, I do want to make sure we talk more about this expansion. That really is the big news. I guess for listeners who might be thinking the expanded aid is going to well-off people who don't really need it, what would you say?
Well, I think, again, I mean, as I gave that example, families, so for a family at, you know, $93,000, which is the 350% of poverty, that is still a very large percentage of their pre-tax income. And the thing is, we are not waiving parent co-payments for families over the 200%. So some families may say, you know, why not? We did use federal relief dollars to waive parent co-payments for all families under 200 and under. But we knew that, you know, we needed to make sure we were being good stewards of the dollars and make sure we had enough to ensure all families that are eligible are able to access assistance with paying for their child care.
So
I would just say that, yeah, go ahead.
Are there work requirements or other stipulations for getting aid?
Yes. So the expanded eligibility is for working families, and that was because of the federal requirement that this was an option under the federal relief dollars for essential workers. So when we promulgated our new regulations around this, we defined essential workers as anybody in New Mexico right now who has to work, because that's we're all going back to work and people need to have access to child care. So, yes, that is a criteria of the expanded eligibility.
Okay. And, you know, are the applications and materials available in other languages? You know, we have a pretty diverse population, lots of Vietnamese speakers and, of course, Spanish speakers in the state.
You know, all our materials that come out of the department are done in English and Spanish simultaneously, but that is a great point, and we're going to make sure that this information is available in other languages as much as possible. But currently it is on our website in both English and Spanish, and families can also reach out to our call center or go online and submit an application.
Okay. What about help over the phone or in person?
Oh, yes. We have offices around the state, and that is also on our website where people can see where all the local early childhood education and care offices are, where people can walk in and get assistance from our eligibility interviewers across the state.
All right. So what's that process like for families that want assistance?
Yes. So families do need to demonstrate, you know, that their relationship to the child, that they are working, what their income is. So they do that through a variety of mechanisms, usually a pay stub. And then there are some other verifications. They fill out an application, and then they have an eligibility interviewer who actually works with them. The most important thing is that they actually have a child care program identified prior to coming in to do that. So the department will then enter into a contract with that provider and pay them every month for the services that they deliver to that child.
Okay, so those payments are made directly to the child care centers on behalf of the families. What about the other component of the announcement, the extra subsidies being paid to child care centers? How does that work?
Yes, so that was what I referenced when I first came on, and every year, every state has to set their rates based on we submit a plan to the federal government, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Administration for Children and Families, Office of Child Care, and we put together a full 3-year plan around everything related to supporting families with young children. And part of that is you have to demonstrate how you ensure equal access to quality care for low-income and vulnerable families. So you have two ways to do that. One is to use a market rate survey of what people are charging for child care, or as what we did in New Mexico, get a pre-approved cost estimation model and set your rates based on what it actually costs to deliver the care versus what the price of care is. So this is huge. I mean, again, our providers can now invest in programs and experiences that will honor and incorporate children's diverse cultural and linguistic backgrounds. They can afford to make those material and infrastructure improvements, creating learning environments that will support the physical, social, emotional, and intellectual growth of young children. And this was huge. I mean, the most significant increases were in our family child care, where we now can actually, it can be actually a business. And we hope to see more of this with our other big announcement we made yesterday, Elevate New Mexico Child Care, that we're going to give powerful tools to our family child care providers, our micro centers, centers that are like less than 80 children, to help them streamline their business processes, to help them better communicate with families and allow them to be more visible with nice websites and other tools, so that we hope that family child care will expand across our state as well as centers with this new rate that actually pays for what it costs to deliver the care to children.
Okay. Since we're starting to talk about paying out to the child care centers, I'd like to go back to Catherine Freeman and Kate Noble to ask kind of, you know, generally, what about pay? How much do early child educators make? Kate and Catherine, are either of you? There you go.
We had, I was going to see if Catherine was going to jump in about the specifics of our early learning center here in Santa Fe, but I can just say we did, as part of the statewide needs assessment, we did a pretty comprehensive survey of early childhood educators, and we found that 40% of them make less than $30,000 a year. Now, this is a little bit old now. You know, we've had COVID, and we're seeing wages rise in lots of different industries. But the fact is, our early childhood workforce still has a long way to go in terms of pay.
Okay. I think, let's see, we have caller Jesse from Santa Fe. Jesse, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, what's your childhood story?
Great. Childhood story is complicated, but I had two things to comment on, and I'll try and keep it brief for you. I'm listening pretty closely, and I think you guys might have missed an opportunity to drop both the phone number. Thank you, Kaveh, for mentioning phones. We don't all have access to the Internet, so I really appreciate that there's a phone number to contact. If you could list that at some point during the call-in show. And then my comment has to do with the question of a price point of where quality child care starts in terms of a payment to a caregiver. I find that the disparity between that number, which again is just imagined in my head, and the number that jobs in Santa Fe and Albuquerque for, I don't want to call it middle class, I'll call it essential workers, the great euphemism of the 21st century. What essential workers are being paid and what we're, what we're expecting in terms of quality child care and what it costs, that's a big, big, big gap. And I appreciate that the state recognizes that and is attempting to relieve that. I wonder when businesses are going to expect to do the same. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Jesse. There were a bunch of issues there. First, I will say the website for ECECD is nmececd.org. We'll get that phone number up onto our webpage for the show at kunm.org right after the show. And Secretary Greginski might have that phone number handy. Is that something you know offhand?
Yes. Okay. I want to give two numbers. One is, as I said, it's important that families have identified a child care provider that they want to utilize. And sometimes they need help doing that because they may not be familiar. So they can call our Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, 1-800-691-9067. And that person will walk them through options and help them see what's available. They can also email the Child Care Resource and Referral at support@newmexicokids.org. So that's just to reach out, get support, and they can give you support on a whole host of things. So that's a great number for all parents in New Mexico to have. And then our call center number where you can connect with ECECD to start an application is 1-800-832-1321.
Okay, thank you. We only have about a minute till our break, but I do want to address the other part of the question with Kate and Catherine from Growing Up New Mexico. About how much should somebody expect to pay for quality childcare?
Hi, Kaveh. This is Catherine. That's a really good question. How much somebody should have to pay for quality child care? Was that the question?
Yeah, our caller was kind of curious to know, you know, where is the price point for quality? Where do those two things meet?
So when we are thinking about, here at Growing Up New Mexico, we also have a kind of demonstration early childhood center, and we are striving for a payment schedule for child care workers and child care providers that's comparable to salaries in the public schools. So, and these are aggressive goals, and it's going to take us a while to get there. But, you know, to have a really highly competent classroom setting, we need to have a teacher in the room, an educator in the room with a bachelor's degree or working towards a bachelor's degree. That starting salary for us is about $36,000, moving up to $45,000 and even beyond as our teachers have bachelor's degrees and master's degrees. So it's not inexpensive. We should look at paying comparable salaries in the early childhood space, again, to public schools, nursing, other industries, because the preparation and the expertise required is at that level.
Okay, I think the answer is that it is going to cost families. We don't quite have a dollar amount. Unfortunately, we do have to take a quick break right now. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be back in a minute.
The remains of 9 children were returned to the Rosebud Sioux tribe nearly 140 years after they were buried at the Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania. Remains of another Alaska Native person was also returned. We'll learn about the journey to bring these relatives home on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old A chord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century, donate it to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It just takes a few minutes, that's 888-KUNM-CAR, or 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. There's still time for you to call to tell us how your family is handling childcare, or if you plan to go back into the childcare profession. Call 277-5866 and tell us what you're thinking. I'd like to introduce another guest. We're grateful to have Oriandi Melas joining the conversation now. She's a childcare worker and also working on an early childhood education degree at UNM. She's been working in education for 9 years, and she's a mother with a young daughter in childcare. And I'll also mention it's her birthday. Happy birthday, Oriandi. Thanks for sharing part of your morning with us.
Hi, thank you. No problem. I am currently an early childhood educator. I do have an early childhood degree, but I went back to school to further my education since it is not enough to be, you know, having a bachelor's degree and making the kind of money I do. So I was, I chose to go back to school in order to be able to have an opportunity to make more money and sustain my family.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I misspoke. So you're actually going for an advanced degree. I guess, you know, I really want people to have a better understanding of the work you do. Can you take us through a typical day?
Yeah. So I am a lead teacher. My job is to be in charge of the classroom, the setup, the activities, the lesson planning, the paperwork, the children's observations, the developmental look into what the classroom is going to look like, looking at the children's evaluations or education needs. So every child needs to be met individually. So every kid has their own, education plan within the classroom. And it's my job to write all of those, for all the children to be able to get into a classroom and develop the skills that they need to become successful once they move on into kindergarten.
Okay, so you've been in education for about 9 years. You're doing early childhood ed for the last few, and you were in public schools before that. What kind of differences have you seen between early childhood education and education for older kids?
Well, in the older children, you can see the difference between the kids that have experienced early childhood education and those that have not. So there is a big difference in the way they're learning, their skills, their social interactions, the conflict resolution between the children. And it's not because we're trying to compare them, but it makes a big difference when children learn how to manage all of this at an early age between 3 and 5 than they are between 6 and 7. Some of these skills are, you know, simple as making relationships, telling teachers what they need, or shouting out their feelings, having conversations where they're elaborating or using imagination, using some sort of critical thinking. And when children don't have opportunity to learn all of this before they actually get, you know, thrown in the classroom with all of these skills, are going to be challenged at the first, on the first day. It makes a huge difference the way they learn, the way they communicate, the way they interact with each other. Sometimes it shows on behavior, and sometimes it shows in different ways. Sometimes if they are not exposed to a type of early childhood care or developmental environment, then, you know, there could be things that are missed, like developmental delays, spectrum sometimes, or other type of interventions that should have been done an early age in order to support these children to move on. Our job is to make sure that we follow the developmental stages of a child from birth to 5 years old. And between those developmental stages, we look at a lot of things that have to do with social interactions, social emotional, skills, physical skills, and a lot of critical thinking. Sometimes if there is anything outside of what I want to say, quotation mark, the norms, we provide early interventions to support these children and approach all of these goals differently. And it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with them. It just means that we are providing different ways of these children to move on with society at the same pace. Because sometimes, you know, there's different children that learn different ways and that they need different types of support. So my job is to make sure that I identify all of these things and provide the children what they need and meet their needs in the classroom as we move on into the next stage.
Okay, I guess I'm also wondering about maybe structural differences between early childhood education and public schools for older kids, because early childhood education is kind of they're businesses, right? They have an education function, but they're also businesses with private owners.
Mm-hmm.
So there differences in maybe support for the teachers, or, you know, lesson plans, or what kind of supplies you have? Is there a difference in how it feels to work in each environment?
Yes. I loved every place where I've worked, and I currently do. I love teaching. But I do say that, I guess, when I was working for the public system, it was a little harder to gain supplies, you know, bring stuff into the classroom. And this is something that every teacher struggles. It wasn't just me. It just depends. The kind of funding that there is for public systems to get stuff for the teachers into the classroom, most of the time it comes from their pockets. In the private setting, there is, I would say, a little bit more help, more with the classroom materials or classroom needs. But if there's any other outside of the box that you would have to provide into the classroom, or if you're like me, I'm an interactive teacher and I'd like to switch things in my classroom a lot and just think outside the box, not really plan a structure. I like to bring things on my own that I will think the children will be able to use in many different ways. So then that comes out of my pocket. Funding will always be for supplies or for anything that we would like to implement in the classroom will always be something that we'll struggle with, because every teacher has different strategies, different ways of teaching. There is no such thing as we write a lesson plan and this is what is going to happen years and years from now. Every group of children is different. All the learning abilities that you need to meet within that 1 year that you're with them, or, you know, month that you're with them, it's different. So then every year you're going to have to modify your classroom differently. And there's always going to be stuff that you'll need to provide because there's no way the schools can do it, whether it's private or public.
Okay, I'd like to bounce that back to Kate Noble. We just heard Oriandi talking about, you know, support from schools in early childhood education and also having to spend money out of pocket. Do you have a reaction?
Yes. I find myself imagining a world where we really empower professionals and, you know that they have the skills and knowledge to do what they need and have the supplies they need in the classroom and with children every day. And this is one of the interesting things that we're working on really actively in New Mexico, is the complexity of the fact that this is a really strong mixed delivery system, which includes private businesses and public early pre-K and pre-K. And in our rural areas, we need what the secretary refers to as family child care, home-based child care, because these are smaller settings. We have the opportunity for really culturally aligned care and to deal with what we call child care deserts. And the state does control a lot of the revenues through the child care subsidies, but because they are private businesses, there's not the ability, well, it's different than it is for the public system. And so working on how that can go, whether some of the subsidies might be required to go to wages. The secretary and her team have done a great job of using stimulus money for various grants that can include supplies for health and safety, for technology tools. But we need to build this into the system in a really durable way. And if we imagine a world where educators are paid incredibly well and their needs and resources are met, that's sort of where we need to go. And to your earlier question about what it should cost for families, it's really actually a complicated one, in part because the subsidies are so good and co-pays vary for income levels. But ultimately, we know that this is a system where there is some of the highest returns for public dollars being invested. And we know that educators need more support because, and the caller who called in, Will, who described his wife as a teacher leaving, is the perfect sort of cycle that we see of interconnected systems. Our system lost a teacher because of the early childhood issues and her need to stay home with her son. And we have to figure out how to get in a more abundant cycle and get educators the wages and all of the supplies they need to really do exactly what we're hearing, you know, be there and be flexible in the moment with the children as to what's happening that day.
Okay, I'd like to go ahead and add one more voice. We only have a few minutes left, but there may still be time for you to call 277-5866 to ask your child care questions. I'd like to introduce Angela Garcia. She's the president of the New Mexico Child Care and Education Association. They represent child care centers around the state, and she also operates the Toy Box Child Care Centers in Las Cruces. Good morning, Angela. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, I got to ask right off the bat, as a business owner, it seems like maybe you're in a pickle here. You have caregivers on one side of you working very hard and wanting to be rewarded, and you have the state with lots of regulatory requirements to maintain your care center status, and you have families that are struggling to afford your services. How do you balance all of these demands?
We do our best. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that One of the biggest things I think that's been mentioned throughout the show that, you know, New Mexico really is making strides in progress in the early childhood education industry, one being the department under the leadership of Secretary Gergensky. I mean, that has been phenomenal in even the stabilization of childcare through this pandemic. You know, I don't think that we would have survived without the department's help and investment.
Going forward, like the secretary mentioned, there are strides being made. We saw our first reimbursement increase since 2014. Unfortunately, in different sectors, as far as different providers, whether in home, and my program being a larger program, there was different reimbursement rates given. And so it is going to be a huge investment that is really going to be needed to get us to that cost of care that the secretary was discussing. And that is really where the wages for our employees is going to exist, in my opinion. We have a very diverse professional industry when it comes to our teachers. I have many of my educators on my staff that have bachelor's degrees. I only have two members of my entire team that aren't currently working towards a degree in early childhood education. These are professionals that are investing their time and their commitment and their efforts and their passion. But unfortunately, when, businesses like mine are, we take, I would say, anywhere between 90-95% of our income comes from state reimbursements through child care assistance, we don't have the means to give these professionals the professional wage that they deserve. So, that's where we find ourselves in a tough situation, so to speak.
And actually, professionalization is kind of maybe a double-edged sword, and I wonder if you feel differently. Let's go to Oriandi with this. I'm thinking that, are you worried that a more professional status would also create a situation where caregivers could demand more money, but that the already high cost of childcare would go up so much that people couldn't afford it? And I ask Oriandi because I know that you are both a mother with a child in childcare, but then an educator too.
Yeah. So before I had my daughter, I was already working in the system, and I didn't realize how much harder it would be to participate as a mom in such a program. When my daughter started at the age, I want to say 2.5, and I started to place her in a preschool, obviously, trying to encourage what I do, it definitely made me realize that what I was making is not a living wage. If I had not been working for the facility that I work, I don't think I would be able to afford to place her in there. And, it's been 4 years, and it just feels like I am working to pay her spot on there, and I'm just, repaying that with the opportunity of her experiencing this. And sometimes I just think to myself, well, I could be doing this at home because, I'm a teacher and I can teach her at home by myself. At the same time, it's just thinking about, well, how am I going to put food on the table? How am I going to make the bills? Do I still have to find a job? What kind of job will make enough money where I can teach her from home or teach her myself while I'm working? And it doesn't work.
Okay, I have about 1 minute left. I want to ask Angela, if the state subsidies result in a surge in enrollment, are you going to be able to handle more kids? Are you going to consider hiring more staff? Are you going to be able to pay more? What do you foresee?
So we're not too sure. A lot of child care centers statewide are still experiencing low enrollment. So with the amazing, $350 increase with the child care assistance, we do know that more families will qualify, but it's hard to say because even families that are qualifying now are not necessarily going to get the assistance. They're not going to, child care.
Okay, Angela, I'm so sorry, but our time is up. It always goes too fast. Thanks to everyone who called in, and thanks so much to our guests, Catherine Freeman, Kate Noble, Secretary Elizabeth Garginski, Oriandi Melas, and Angela Garcia. Starting next week, expanded eligibility goes into effect. Find details and links from today's show on our website, KUNM.org. And please keep sharing your thoughts on Twitter, #LetsTalkNM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon, or you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Megan Kamrick and Zaylee Pollan handled the phones. Robert Maldonado live tweeted, and Ty Bannerman is our executive producer. I'm Kaveh Movahed. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.